News Radio 1280. WWTC, Minneapolis, St. Paul.
In the Twin Cities at 4 o'clock, mostly cloudy skies and 23 degrees. I'm Doug Channing.
This is Bob Bungard among the top stories at this hour. Hennepin County had its first ever State of the County address today. And Board Chairman Richard O'Hanson said there will be a general reorganization of all county departments. One of those departments to change is the County Welfare Board, which will be called the Human Services Board. Hanson says the new board will handle many additional functions.
The Human Services Board will bring together under it many functions that now are not really under the County Welfare Board. For example, we can consider, and I think we will be considering, putting some of the elements of the Court Services Department under the Human Services Board. It's an attempt at bringing together services for families that are presently under our system or in the county system in one way or another, but dealing with different departments of county government.
Hennepin County Board Chairman Richard O. Hanson.
The Stillwater Prisoners Union has announced it is filing suit against various state agencies and officials over the use of prisoners' funds and property. A representative of the prisoners and one of the plaintiffs is Gene Robinson, who tells News Radio that felons and ex-felons alike have a right to know what is done with their personal property.
We want to know what's happened to the interest money on the inmates' accounts. You know, who has it? Has it been invested? If it hasn't been invested, why hasn't it been invested? You know, and so this has happened over the last 10 years. And so what we're asking is a lot of whys, and we're concerned about what's happened to their personal property that's taken away from them. And we're not talking about illegal things. We're talking about legal property, radios and watches and books and things like that, and we're saying what's happened to them.
Robinson says some inmates have received interest on their funds, but others don't, and that the women inmates at Shakopee don't receive any interest on their money at all.
It's 4:02, now the WWTC Metro forecast for Minneapolis, St. Paul. Chance of snow flurries tonight and an overnight low near 18 degrees. A possibility of light snow tomorrow and a high near 30. Chance of measurable snowfall, 5% tonight and 40% tomorrow. Winds will be light and variable tonight, becoming southeasterly at 8 to 13 miles per hour for tomorrow. The outlook for Sunday, mostly cloudy and colder with a chance of snow at night. Currently in the Twin Cities, winds northeast at 6, humidity 68%. Barometric pressure rising from 29.60 inches, mostly cloudy skies and 23 degrees. That's minus 5 on the Celsius scale, Doug.
Oh, that's cold. If you're a Celsius fan. Well, typical Friday night for the traffic scene, we hear. Heavy traffic in many areas, including some congestion and the typical slow moving. And let's find out more precisely what it's like. We check with our Spot Patrol pilot, Howie Vetterick.
Spot Patrol 5 with you on the Friday afternoon traffic watch. 4 o'clock, we'll move along I-94 between the cities, and everything is moving okay. We'll talk to you at 4:30.
I like that, short and sweet. Stuart Baird, Corporate Public Relations Manager for Honeywell of Minneapolis, says Honeywell is optimistic about a modest recovery in both computer and controls operations this year.
Honeywell characterizes 1976 as the year of the marketing shift from volume to profits. Emphasis throughout American industry as well as at Honeywell will be placed on marketing for improved profits and to bringing new, really, truly useful products to the marketplace.
Baird says Honeywell has an excellent opportunity for improved domestic sales in 1976, but foreign economies are still lagging behind the U.S. recovery.
In the latest development in the drawn-out Reserve Mining Company case, federal attorneys want that company to pay water filtration expenses at Duluth and other North Shore cities. Lawyers for the U.S. Corps of Engineers made that pitch today in St. Paul in the first court session on the case held before U.S. District Court Judge Edward Devitt. Devitt took over the case after the appellate court in St. Louis bounced out U.S. District Judge Miles Lord. Higher court had found that Lord was biased against Reserve, which is under orders to switch to an on-land site for its taconite tailings. At present, Reserve deposits about 67,000 tons of tailings daily into Lake Superior.
The Minnesota Environmental Quality Council has decided not to require an environmental impact statement for a proposed malt plant at Moorhead. Officials of Anheuser-Busch Incorporated indicated the plant might be built at Fargo, North Dakota, across the Red River, if an environmental study was required for the $30 million facility. There was considerable debate on the matter before the Quality Council meeting at St. Paul today, but the council rejected, on a 7-3 vote, a motion that the study be required. Barbara Lurkman offered that motion. Only one supporting her were EQC Chairman Peter Vanderpool, the Director of the State Energy Agency, John Milhone. The Governor's representative on the Council, Andrew Kozak, told the Council in these words, "We're talking about a delay of a year if the study is required. There is a chance the plant would just jump across the river to Fargo."
Negotiations are going on today in the strike of public school teachers at two Minnesota communities, Faribault and Minnetonka. Meantime, the walkout at Faribault has complicated early graduation for 23 seniors who were taking accelerated coursework. They were graduated by school board action last Friday. But teachers contend they, the teachers, should have made the final determination on whether the seniors passed their classes. A spokesman for the teacher said today he had word from the deputy commissioner of the State Department of Education, Farley Bright, that a conflict did indeed exist and that it could have to be worked out.
At the Twin Cities editor's desk this afternoon, it's Mike Ryan. 6 minutes past 4 o'clock in the Twin Cities, we have 23 degrees, heading for an overnight low this evening of near 18 degrees. I'm Bob Bungard, along with Doug Channing, for your news and information service. WWTC, all news all the time.
January, as usual, has brought chilly, wintry blasts. All the more reason to make someone's world a little brighter with flowers professionally arranged by a North Central florist. Fresh flowers or lush green plants are the perfect remembrance for birthdays, anniversaries, hospitalized friends, or for no reason at all except to say, we're thinking of you. Make someone's world a little brighter today. Visit or call your favorite North Central florist, your assurance of beauty and quality.
It's Friday, January 23rd, 1976. This is Dave Henderson.
And I'm Rosemary Frasino with your news and information service.
Reuters news agency reports that Russian officials have told Secretary of State Kissinger they have rejected an offer from NATO designed to cut back forces in Central Europe. NATO had called on the Soviets to withdraw a tank army in return for NATO's withdrawal of about 1,000 nuclear weapons. The sources also say Kissinger relayed the Soviet decision to a NATO foreign ministers meeting in Brussels today.
The United States and the Soviets failed to see eye to eye on Angola. Following talks with the Russians on the fate of the Western African nation, Secretary of State Kissinger told reporters that situation remains unsatisfactory. Meanwhile, on the battlefront in Angola, Soviet-backed troops continue to reap decisive victories, taking three central Angolan towns and threatening Huambo. Carol Murphy has details.
Heavy fighting is going on in the eastern part of Angola near two vital railway stations on the Benguela Railway. Observers agree that if the South African troops fighting with UNITA withdraw, that the mixed Cuban and MPLA forces will advance quickly. MPLA claims it is making progress in its advance towards the capital of UNITA territory in the central highlands of Angola. The port town of Novo Redondo is a no-man's land. Though the MPLA has pushed the South Africans out of the port, 120 miles south of Luanda, they have not yet been able to enter the town. Carol Murphy, NBC News, Luanda, Angola.
Yesterday, there were 11 announced candidates for the Democratic presidential nomination. Today, there are 10. Former North Carolina Governor Terry Sanford has withdrawn from the field, saying he's concluded he would be unable to put together a winning presidential campaign. Sanford said he's not interested in any other political positions and will return to his job as president of Duke University.
Paul Robeson, the actor properly best known for his stirring portrayal of Othello, has died in Philadelphia at the age of 77. Robeson was admitted to a Philadelphia hospital on December 28th after suffering a stroke. Robeson, a black, had been an outspoken critic of racism in America.
The Vatican has released documents indicating that Pope Pius XII secretly intervened with the Nazis to try to save hundreds of Jews arrested by the SS when the Germans occupied Rome. This is your news and information station.
Ladies, take special note of wall bombs for cruise wear. Now is the time that you'll find swimwear by DeWeese and Cole of California. Also, sportswear for golf and tennis. Denims for daytime leisure. Select from Coordinates by Dalton. Fashion correct for any hour from dawn till dawn. Buy your entire cruisewear wardrobe from Wall Bombs in a variety of fashion styles and fabrics. All highly packable to meet travel requirements. You know, for many years, Irene Bryant has personally selected the fashions you find in every department at Walbaum's stores. As a result, shopping at Walbaum's is a fashion experience that you can count on to provide you with an exquisite wardrobe for every season and every special event of your life through the entire year. Walbaum's Ladies Apparel, four stores to serve you. Miracle Mile in St. Louis Park, Colonial Square in Wayzata, Brookdale and Ridgedale. Walbaum's, truly a fashion experience.
Next, the Plymouth Report, brought to you by Floyd B. Olson Realty. Plymouth, one of the fastest growing communities in the metro area, and Floyd B. Olson Realty is a realtor to see in Plymouth. Floyd B. Olson Realty is the largest multiple listing realtor located in Plymouth. This means they have a wider selection of homes to choose from. They know Plymouth can give you the information you need to know about the community. Their expertise will help you choose just the right home. Call Floyd B. Olson Realty today at 546-2421 or stop in at 11425 Olson Memorial Highway in Plymouth. See Floyd B. Olson Realty. Well, if Plymouth residents have any questions about snow removal laws in their city, Dave Krieger takes on the task of explaining them now in this Suburban Report from Plymouth.
With winter's grasp firmly upon us, it may be well for each citizen to review the various ordinances that govern snow and ice removal in the city of Plymouth. The city has 125 miles of streets from which snow must be removed. It requires approximately 14 hours to plow all of the streets, with first priority given to major thoroughfare and collector streets. To assist the street maintenance department in doing its job of snow removal, the city has developed a set of ordinances which regulate the parking of vehicles on city streets. Firstly, no vehicle shall be parked upon any street in any one place for a continuous period longer than 12 hours. Secondly, after a snowfall of at least 2.5 inches, parking is prohibited from any public street until and after the particular street has been plowed and the snow is removed to the curb line or to the shoulder of the road. Thirdly, no person shall deposit any snow or ice, plowed or removed, from any private property onto the traveled portion of any public street. And lastly, any vehicle found to be impeding the removal of snow is to be declared a public nuisance and ordered to be removed and impounded. The owner of the vehicle is then subject to a traffic ticket and impounding fees. So remember that parked vehicles hamper plowing and impede emergency vehicles and the traffic flow. For further information, please contact the Plymouth Police or Street Maintenance Departments. From Plymouth, this is Dave Krieger reporting.
The Plymouth Report has been brought to you by Floyd B. Olson Realty.
It's 12 past 4 in the Twin Cities, 23 degrees. I'm Bob Bungard, along with Doug Channing, for your news and information service, WWTC, all news all the time.
The Vikings have a new defensive coach. I'm Doug Channing, and here's what's happening in sports. Minnesota Vikings have hired a new defensive coach. He is J.D. Buddy Ryan, who formerly coached the defensive line of the New York Jets. Ryan replaces Jack Patera, who left the Vikes to become head coach of the new NFL team in Seattle. Minnesota Fighting Saints are host to San Diego at St. Paul tonight, and there's another financial pinch plaguing the World Hockey Association team. Learned the Saints are behind in their rent, nearly $50,000. Saints play their home games at the St. Paul Civic Center. Earlier, the owners had trouble making the team payroll, and the players were late in getting a two-week allocation. Meanwhile, the North Stars are at Vancouver for a game tonight, with the Canadian team aiming to reverse the luck of Wednesday night when the North Stars dumped them 5-1 at the Met. It's fight time tomorrow in Las Vegas with George Foreman squaring off against Ron Lyle. More on the story from Bruce Cole at the Sports Pavilion at Caesars Palace.
The weigh-in for the George Foreman-Ron Lyle fight has just ended. Foreman weighed in at 226 pounds with Lyle going 220. Both fighters are about 5 pounds over what they usually handle, and it shows. Foreman looks more beefy than he has before, but he stands 6'3 and should be able to carry the weight for 12 rounds. Lyle doesn't look as heavy. He appears to be in good shape, at least with this amount of weight at a 6'3.5 frame. Now, the key issue in this match, I believe, is going to be age. Foreman holds that edge at 27, with Lyle being 33. This is Bruce Cole in Las Vegas.
A sensational young quarterback of the Atlanta Falcons, Steve Bartkowski, has undergone surgery on his left elbow, the operation to repair ligament damage. The elbow problem kept Bartkowski out of 4 games last fall. CBS says last Sunday's Super Bowl game was watched by more than 29 million homes, or in more than 29 million homes, with an audience of between 72 and 77 million persons. CBS says the game drew a 78% share of all television sets. That's a record, as was the number of homes. Well, that's sports to this hour. I'm Doug Channing. It's coming up on 14 minutes past 4 o'clock.
The WWTC Metro forecast, a chance of flurries tonight, overnight low near 18. Possibility of light snow tomorrow with a high near 30. Chance of measurable snowfall, 5% tonight, 40% tomorrow. In the Twin Cities currently, mostly cloudy skies, 23 degrees at 15 minutes past 5 o'clock. I'm Bob Bungard, along with Doug Channing, for your news and information service.
This is Rosemary Fusino.
And I'm Dave Henderson with your news and information service.
A House Intelligence Committee has approved the final report on its long investigation into the U.S. intelligence activities. Marilyn Robinson has a report from the Capitol.
Committee Chairman Otis Pike said he did not feel the report damaged the national security and that his committee had rephrased or deleted more than half of the references to sources and places made in objections from the executive branch. Pike also said the committee deleted items that might embarrass the U.S. with other nations and some items critical of members of the executive branch. Four members of this committee objected to the adoption of this report. Representative Robert McClory said the report violates an agreement between the committee and the executive in that a copy of this report was not presented to the White House for its approval. Marilyn Robinson, NBC News at the Capitol.
CIA Director William Colby has criticized the manner in which Congress oversees his agency, saying that Congress leaks too many secrets. Colby called for a single oversight committee instead of the eight committees now required to be briefed on covert operations.
I have many times expressed my belief that I think it's somewhat better that a non-professional be the head of the agency and be supported by the professionals in it. In somewhat the same fashion that the head of the Army, the Defense Department, the Navy, and so forth, are appointees, civilian appointees, outside of the profession itself.
Colby's remarks came in testimony before the Senate Government Operations Committee.
The Senate Intelligence Committee has voted to release some of its files to the Justice Department for use in its investigation of possible criminal charges against former CIA Director Richard Helms and other officials. The files contain information about a 1971 break-in at the home of a former CIA employee, possible perjury by Helms in connection with CIA covert operations in Chile, and an alleged plot to murder columnist Jack Anderson.
Secretary of State Kissinger has told NATO foreign ministers that the Soviet Union has proposed a reduction of about 10% in U.S. and Soviet nuclear weapons as a means of breaking a deadlock blocking a new treaty. Kissinger is currently in Brussels. He'll travel to Madrid tomorrow for the expected signing of an agreement between Spain and the U.S., extending American use of four military bases in Spain. For the use of the bases, America reportedly will pay over $1 billion in military aid to Spain over a five-year period.
Kissinger has said that a proposed agreement in Spain will be in the form of a treaty, but he has rejected a report calling it a defense treaty. Of the $1.25 billion to be spent for the use of those bases, $800 million will be in military grants and loans, the remainder in commercial credits from the U.S. Export-Import Bank.
The Big Four automakers report continued progress in their push to sell their way out of a two-year slump. Figures for the period of January 11th through the 20th show General Motors sales up 44% over last year, the strongest since 1973. The Ford Motor Company spokesman said Ford sales were also up.
Ford and Lincoln Mercury dealers in the United States delivered 46,500 cars and 20,000 trucks in the January 11th through 20th sales period. The passenger car daily selling rate of 5,808 was up 18% from the rate of the year-ago period. The truck selling rate was 2,506 a day, up 59% from the same 1975 selling period.
Chrysler reports sales for the January period up 10%. American Motor Sales gains about 11%.
A new move begins next week in Switzerland to effect an international ban on certain weapons that might cause unnecessary suffering or have indiscriminate effects. Representatives of about 30 nations will meet in Lugano to try to draw up an international ban on things like napalm, fragmentation bombs, booby traps, and laser beam devices. In announcing the start of the new four-week meeting, the Red Cross said the first session had been held in 1974, but had produced no ban on such weapons. The time right now, 19 minutes past the hour.
On Wall Street today, the stock market closed sharply higher in heavy trading. The Dow Jones average up almost 11 points. There have been some big developments in the mini computer business. Jim Newman has the details.
If you can believe it, the mini computer business will get a little tougher. The industry now is very competitive and changing. Honeywell had revenues last year of $1.2 billion, but the company only shipped 2% of the many computers sold. The company was far behind Digital Equipment, Hewlett-Packard, and Data General. Honeywell is not known for selling many computers, primarily because it has not been active in selling to original equipment manufacturers, or the OEMs. Now, Honeywell is producing equipment aimed directly at the OEM market. Honeywell's management is very optimistic about the new line. It has taken the company 3 years of planning and design to bring the models to market. This is Jim Newman.
Again on Wall Street today, in very heavy trading, some 34 million shares, the Dow Jones average up 10.47. This is your news and information station.
This is Jack O'Rourke with sports. Elmo Beatty has been named the head coach of the Virginia Squires of the American Basketball Association. At the Bing Crosby Pro-Am Golf Tournament at Pebble Beach, California, Jack Nicklaus and Mike Morley continue to lead the pack. In Austria, the final Men's World Cup downhill race has been postponed until Sunday. Race officials say soft snow in the area has made the trail much too dangerous for any kind of competition. Rosemary Frasino, what's ahead now?
Jimmy Carter hopes to turn the states of Mississippi and Oklahoma into repeats of his success in Iowa, and Bill Lynch will take a look to see whether or not he thinks he can do it.
This is Dick Culp. In 1970, Washington Post reporter Robert Kaiser was told he'd be going to the Soviet Union as the newspaper's Moscow bureau chief. Kaiser got a year off to study the language and the country before beginning his assignment. He found, he said, that there was no single reference source that would give him an overview of the modern social and political system there. So he decided to write one. Russia, the People, and the Power is the result of that decision. Kaiser's book attempts to tell the story of the Soviet Union of the early 1970s through its people and the interrelationship of the Russian character with the Soviet communist philosophy and bureaucracy. Kaiser's first encounter with the wheels of government happened on his first day in the Soviet Union because he and his wife had decided to get to Moscow the long way around.
It wasn't easy. What we decided to do was come in through Siberia, which meant flying from New York to Tokyo, taking a Soviet steamer from Yokohama to the Soviet port of Nahodka, which is just up from Vladivostok, and then getting on the Trans-Siberian Railroad and riding for literally 1 week from Nahodka to Moscow. Actually, we got off in three cities and had visits along the way in Siberia. But when I arrived at Nahodka, 12,000 miles from New York and 5,000, 7,000 miles from Moscow, and presented my visa, the Soviet official looked at it, announced that this visa was valid only for entry at Moscow Airport, which led to a three-hour delay, me sitting in this cabin as all the other passengers filed out, and I literally telephoned Moscow to clear the Kaiser family for arrival in Nahodka. Luckily, they cleared it through.
Robert Kaiser spent 3 years on assignment in the Soviet Union for his newspaper, The Washington Post. His experiences there in Russia and subsequent interviews with Soviet emigres to Israel and elsewhere throughout the world form much of the source material for his new book, Russia, the People and the Power, a book just published by Athenaeum. This is Dick Culp.
Jimmy Carter hopes to repeat his Iowa success with good showings in Mississippi and Oklahoma. Bill Lynch sizes up the Oklahoma contest.
Carter has competition here from Birch Bayh, Lloyd Benson, and Fred Harris, a native of Cotton County. For an early appraisal of the race, we questioned State Senator Bob Funston of Tulsa, chairman of the State Democratic Party.
Well, it's kind of hard to rate them. I think there are also some groups within the party that are very active in pushing for an uncommitted delegation. The Carter people and the Manson people have been active the longest. Fred Harris was able to come back in and pick up people that he'd had with him when he was in the Senate. So all three of them are very active. Harris, in the last week, has had some big meetings throughout the state, and that's going to pay off. Anybody who goes to the trouble to go to a meeting to hear him is apt to go to a precinct meeting. At this point, I would say that Carter and Benson, I have thought, would get more delegates than Harris. Harris is now putting on a pretty strong push. The Bayh people I don't find to be too organized on that level. And again, the uncommitted, I think, will be... I wouldn't be surprised if at the precinct level our uncommitted is about the same level it was in Iowa, for example.
Funston plans to run in his home precinct as an uncommitted delegate and hopes others will do so to give Oklahoma more maneuvering room at the New York convention. Bill Lynch, NBC News, Oklahoma City.
Snakes have been mistaken for sticks before, and sticks for snakes, but a Tennessee man makes something that looks like both. Daniel Mack has the story.
The story is about Robert Leip of Rogersville, Tennessee. When he retired a few years ago, he took up a very special mountain craft. He now spends his days carving canes that look like they have snakes crawling up them. What good is that? Well, not much if you're looking for a good sturdy cane. But Mr. Leip's skill, combined with an accident of nature, does produce a unique folk art. Mr. Leip looks for small trees that have been choked by vines, usually honeysuckle or smoke vines. He then whittles the vines away from the wood and puts a day's work into the finishing touches on his snake canes. But I'll let him tell you about that. Now, the phone lines to Rogersville were difficult, so you'll have to listen carefully to Mr. Leip's description of his craft.
I find them in the mountain, you know, where the vine grows around them and makes them grow in that shape. And then I take that wood, it makes that wood float around there and just look like an old snake.
Mr. Leip can hardly keep up with the orders he has for his snake canes, but he told me he enjoys his trips out to find the wood even more than he does making the canes themselves. That's Robert Leip of Rogersville, Tennessee. I'm Daniel Mack.
And this is your news and information station.
UFO, fact or fiction, on WWTC by 2005 East Lake Street, home of Bucks Unpainted Furniture Stores and Lake Street Auto Radio.